All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out here with my man Kevin Dunn. BK is at a wedding, so my man John Reichel back there twisting and tweaking the dials. It's not Good Friday, but we're playing good music on this Friday. So what is this good music you're playing for us, John?
So some of you might be familiar with the track.
Kenny and the Jets.
Yeah, but this version's called Kenny and the Jets, spelled K-E-N-N-I.
What?
Like, and yeah, it's by the Fearless Flyers.
I was going to say, it didn't quite sound the same, but I like it, though.
Yeah, this is like
it's
a
groovy.
Kenny G spin on the song.
That's it's groovy. Kenny, this is Kenny G?
It's called Kenny and the Jets. That's what the song's called.
But it is Kenny G, though.
It's not, no. Nah. It's just
okay.
In the style
okay.
of it. That's
See,
what I
no.
mean.
Because I appreciate that they are paying homage
exactly.
to Kenny G. I thought it was Kenny G playing it, and it would have made it so much cooler.
I know,
because picturing Kenny G getting down is always kind of cool to me.
Are we thinking about the same Kenny G?
Yeah. I don't think Kenny G's cool.
Okay.
But
the,
when Kenny G...
The Weird Al version of the saxophone?
Yeah. All Kenny right. G with the long, weird hair
yeah.
and all that. Yeah. Dude, Kenny G at one time was considered the man. I know now
True.
We mock Kenny G, but
right.
at one point, Kenny
really?
G, oh, dude, Kenny
was,
G was...
He was invited to the White House to perform in front of everybody.
Exactly. Like, Kenny G was the man at one point.
I was ahead of the game because I was mocking Kenny G
before
at
my
the time,
whole life.
At the time, Kenny G was cool. You were still mocking him?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't deny it one time. Kenny G gained a huge fan base. And I never bought
yeah.
a Kenny G album in my life.
But
I'll
we
tell you
mocked
that.
Them too.
But why do I know who Kenny G is? And why do people still know who Kenny G is? Why the hell does John know who Kenny G is?
Because John's into music.
But everybody knows Kenny G.
Most people John's age don't
I
know
could
Kenny
bring up
G.
Kenny
That's
G
true.
Like the Snoop, and Snoop would know Kenny G. Like and
Snoop knows music and is an old soul.
You know what I mean?
BK would know him.
Think about it. We shouldn't all know Kenny G if he's that. You know what I mean? If he's
Nobody
that,
should remember Kenny G.
If he's that embarrassing.
He is that embarrassing.
But he's infamous now.
Look,
he's a part of pop culture.
That's true.
When we have the meeting,
can't
are
deny
a,
it, man.
A lot of white people to be embarrassed about. It's a long meeting. But Kenny G got kicked out years ago.
Kenny, you're just hating on Kenny G.
Yeah.
He found his niche.
Yeah.
His niche. Dude, everybody's got to find their
so
niche.
So did Gallagher.
Exactly. His
right?
niche.
And I don't respect him.
I don't respect prop comments, but I respect him because he found his niche. Find your niche where you can make millions of dollars off doing
millions.
Something. Millions of doing something that really doesn't showcase that much talent, but
no.
you know what? You found your niche. Good for you.
Exactly.
You marketed yourself well. You found your niche. Look at Kim Kardashian.
Like
Sex
Zach Wilson's
tape,
mom.
Found her niche. Sex tape. Boom.
Zach
now
Wilson's
she's a
mom.
Millionaire. Billionaire.
She's finding her niche.
She found her... Well... She found her niche,
She's
too.
Finding it.
She's finding
She's
it.
She's not quite there yet.
Ted Williams found his niche, and it was hitting a baseball. Last hitter to hit 400 in the majors. We were talking about Ted Williams randomly because we were talking about how his family and he himself agreed to just have his head frozen.
Yeah.
And didn't reanimate it later.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine send me this story because I completely
frozen,
forgot
right?
about it. It is allegedly still frozen. But in 2009, this guy wrote a book. A former employee of the place Alcor that froze Ted Williams' head and still allegedly has it on ice. He alleged Larry Johnson was his guy's name. And the book is called Frozen, My Journey into the World of Cryonics, Deception, and Death.
Larry Johnson, like UNLV Larry Johnson?
Yeah, not the same one,
okay.
but that's his name, yeah. And he claimed in his book that he watched an Alcor official swing a monkey wrench at Ted Williams' frozen severed head to try to remove a tuna can stuck to it. He said the first swing accidentally struck the head Johnson contains and the second knocked the tuna can loose.
Why is there a tuna can frozen
to it? Alcor Life Extension Foundation of Scottsdale, Arizona issued a statement on his website denying these allegations. Johnson says he worked for Alcor for 8 months in 2003, first as a clinical director, then as a chief operating officer. He included several photographs in the book, including one of an upside-down severed head, not Williams, that had what appeared to be a tuna can attached to it. Johnson says Alcor used the cans from a cat that lived on the premises.
Oh, my God.
He said that Williams' head was being transferred from one container to another when the monkey wrench incident took place. He said the head was removed from the first container. He said he claims that they were basically using Ted Williams' head as, you know, like batting practice with it and all kind of stuff. This dude's crazy. I mean,
John, do you believe
it's crazy
this?
Story.
It's hard to believe, but it's... kind of sick to me that I can believe it at all, you know? Tuna can, monkey wrench, batting practice. It's just too much. This man's a legend.
He said...
He paid for this privilege to have this happen to him.
He said there was one scene, a scene when a room packed with people, many of whom posed for pictures with Ted Williams' body, both before and after the head was cut off. The book contends the head was hanging by a thread when an official entered the room and shouted it was supposed to be a full body freezing.
Oh my God.
Williams' head and body were frozen separately, says...
Here's my question. Are these yearly payments? Is it like public storage?
I assume it has to be. It can't be just a one-time thing.
If you don't keep paying, then...
Because what if they go out of business?
Because then you'd be like, all right, we're going to do whatever we want with the head.
What if they go out of business? Like, what happens?
I've heard about that, actually. Yeah, if a company buys them out, they have to... Their bodies are considered like property, and so they have to take them all. If you buy the company, you have to be in charge of it.
You got to continue that.
You have to continue them. Yeah, you have to honor it because it's like they still have the human right of, you know, being a body, but they're still like a proper part of the company itself. It's a weird 50-50 split of property and human beings, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Nuts.
Yeah. So, sorry. Random sidebar.
You looked it up during the break, and John and I were...
I can't believe that's
flabbergasted.
That's just a...
Use that word at the meeting a lot.
Yeah, that's allegations from a book, though, and from a former employee, but that's not what the cryogenics facility actually claimed. They said none of that... that monkey business and any of that, those hijinks happened at their facility.
Swinging a monkey wrench, like the tuna frozen on there.
The details are given. It's like, why bring up the tuna can if you're gonna lie about it? Just, you know, make up that they were hitting it with a monkey wrench,
kicking it around. Yeah, that's oddly specific for him to make up.
It's very
specific. It's one of those details that it makes you believe it a little bit more.
Maybe that's why a good lie always is about the details.
Lie always has some
nice little details in there.
Yeah, detail-oriented stuff.
All right, let's get back to some detail-oriented stuff here on the triple option with RBKD. Yesterday, we started a CBS Sports article, which went through, I think, weekly.
Yeah.
Went through every week of the season, highlighting the best games and potential top games of that week. I believe we made it close to halfway through the list.
Yes, we got through week 8. Now, you remember that changes now because there are 17 games. All of us trying to adjust with that.
Your math is off. Yeah. It's weird.
I think they're a 10-win, I guess 11-win team, but they don't feel like an 11-win team. An 11-win team is really a 10-win team, so we'll figure that out. Yeah, we got through week 8.
It's going to take a while.
Week 9. Okay, this could be the matchup of the year. Packers at the Chiefs. But as when we went through weeks 1 through 8, we just don't know with the Packers. So if Aaron Rodgers is still on the Packers, this could be great. I mean, this could be the older GOAT for some people, just with their eyeballs, not obviously resume, in Aaron Rodgers going up against the guy who we all think just has Hall of Fame written all over him, already has a Super Bowl ring, already an MVP, Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, and for Pat Mahomes, you know, I think he is going to benefit this year from a rebuilt offensive line, one he can grow with. They got younger on their offensive line. They upgrade the talent on the O-line, and they got cheaper on the O-line. It's just a smart move by that front office. That was the biggest reason they lost the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is the most pressured quarterback in Super Bowl history. So they fixed their biggest issue. So the Chiefs are going to be fine. I think they're going to be better on the O-line than they have been the last 2 years, and that's scary. For the Packers... Yeah, I mean, the Packers, without Aaron Rodgers, there's nothing to talk about. So I think it's going to be, obviously, there's a lot to discuss in terms of where he's going and, you know, how Jordan Love plays, but they're not going to be competitive without Aaron Rodgers. They're not going to be the team that's, you know, basically been a Super Bowl contender and gotten to the NFC title game the last 2 years without Aaron Rodgers.
Sitting right here, all right, it is May 14th. Is this Packers at Chiefs game in week 9 with Aaron Rodgers or not?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is.
You think he's coming back?
Yeah, he's coming back. They're not gonna let him. Yeah, I think something.
Talked to any of your NFL people on that?
No, I just think that right now he's gonna end up coming back because they're not gonna get what they want in return for him, and he's not gonna sit out this season because he's got to pay back way too much money. He'll end up paying back $30-40 million in money. Guys don't want to do that.
No,
I don't give a damn how much you hate the team you're playing for. You ain't giving back $40 million.
I know.
No.
No, sir.
No.
I'm playing. Especially,
I'm gonna play.
They're gonna be good too.
They're gonna be good. He knows that. So I think he'll play. I think next year he's gone.
Okay.
I think after next season he's gone for sure. Because they got to start thinking about what they're gonna do with Jordan Love.
Yep.
Yeah.
Other notable game in week 9, you got Titans at the Rams was the one that stood out to me a little bit. And I just like that stylistically with what the Rams do with their zone scheme. Yeah. And I'm really excited, as I mentioned yesterday, just to see what the Rams look like with Matt Stafford. And then the Titans obviously are going to bring that ground and pound and real physical approach with Aaron Donald and that defense.
Yeah, that defense for the Rams was so good last year. I mean, it's best defense in the league, arguably, with the best player on defense in the league in Aaron Donald.
You can't argue that.
You can't argue that at all. I do wonder, for both of these teams, right, what happened last year, what stood out for the Rams last year was that defense. Part of it was the scheme. Brandon Staley came in as a defensive coordinator. Had a really great scheme, maximized, weaponized all that talent on defense, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, and now he's the head coach of the Chargers. They got a new defensive scheme. I wonder how much of a role that'll play in that defensive effectiveness. And on the Titans side of the ball, they lost Arthur Smith, longtime offensive coordinator, who's been really, really good for them. I wonder how that affects their offensive identity. He is now the head coach of the Falcons. So both of those teams got to answer those two big questions for me before I jump on board. But I see the Rams having that advantage because I think Jared Goff was holding back Sean McVay offensively, and that's a scary thought.
I totally agree. Yeah. And let's just see where that offensive line is, too, because that zone protects a lot of stuff with the run game. It doesn't necessarily protect it with the passing game, even though there's the boot waggle concept and kind of changing that target. So we'll see exactly how deep they are, but I'm just excited to see what the Rams look like. Week 10, this article has Ravens at the Dolphins. I guess.
Yeah.
Honestly, Week 10 isn't totally loaded. Rams at 49ers
could
be really good.
I was going to say, Rams at 49ers would be the one that I would look at that's really sexy to me. Even Seahawks at Packers, if Aaron Rodgers is playing in Week 10, that might be sexier to me than Ravens at Dolphins. I see where they're going with it, though, because the defense of the Dolphins was a top-five defense last year.
That's what they said. Fascinating defensive matchup.
Yeah, and then the Ravens. The Ravens' offense is supposed to be better. They couldn't get Juju Smith-Schuster or T.Y. Hilton to come play for them last year as wide receivers in free agency. When they offered them more money, they turned down more money to go play with, you know, to go play with the team they're playing with now, because I think they favored the quarterback situation. So even though Lamar Jackson's an MVP, I think a lack of at least the lack of magnetism that he has, all right, as in terms of a free being able to attract big time free agents and weapons for him, that shows you how teams perceive him, at least how players perceive him around the league. So they drafted him a lot of wideouts. They drafted Rashad Bateman in the first round. They drafted Tylan Wallace in the fourth round last year. They drafted Devin DuVernay last year in the third round, drafted Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, 2-3 years ago, excuse me, in the first round. So they've just been building that wide receiving core around them because they really have had a hard time developing wide receivers around them, and they've had a hard time trying to lure free agent wide receivers to come to Baltimore and play with Lamar Jackson.
You're exactly right. He's got to step it up a little bit and just be better with his accuracy down the field. Week 11, Colts at the Bills. The Colts, man, I mean, talk about with the Rams. The Colts, I want to see exactly what Frank can do with Carson Wentz and what he looks like.
I got a lot of faith in Frank Reich, man. I think he is a damn good coach. We've seen him go to the playoffs now with different starting quarterbacks. That's really hard to do. So I think that system is tailor-made for Wentz to come in and have success. But I don't know how much faith I have in Carson Wentz. I think he's scared of competition. I think that was proven a little bit true when Jalen Hurts came in and he became very insecure. And I think it's hard to win over a locker room like that.
Yep.
You know, Sam Ehlinger is now there, and I'm sure that Sam Ehlinger is actually going to get a lit. I think he'll get a little playing time, more as a situational player for fourth down, for short yardage situations, for goal line situations. They did that last year when they had Jacoby Brissett.
Yep.
So I think Sam Ehlinger's going to take that role, but that could easily help Sam Ehlinger transition more into, you know, the coach's favorite, and especially over a guy like Wentz if he struggles. And I think he may struggle early on.
I think he could, too. Week 12 has the Buccaneers at the Colts, which will be a game to look at, and also Rams at the Packers. But how about Browns at the Ravens? That's the one they picked. It's the one I'd pick, too. Obviously, the history between those two organizations, but also the game last year. I mean, they played a game that had 89 points last year. So, you think of those teams, you're going to think a little bit more defense. That was one of the most fun games to watch.
It was. It was definitely one of the best games we've watched in the NFL in a long time. And, you know, different types of offenses, different types of quarterbacks, and that's what the NFL is about now. So, that game could go either way. Will the Ravens take the next step offensively with Lamar Jackson. When we first saw them unveil that offense that they built around Lamar Jackson, it was incredible.
Caught people off guard.
Took the NFL by storm. The NFL even admitted, you know, that basically the advantage they had was that you couldn't replicate Lamar Jackson in practice.
Right.
A 4-3 player at quarterback. You don't have that when you're practicing against them. Whoever your backup quarterback is or scout team quarterback, it doesn't present that picture. The first time you see that speed is real time on game day, and it shocked the senses for a lot of teams. But after 2-3 years, teams have got film out there. They've played Lamar Jackson a couple of times, so they've gotten a chance to acclimate themselves to the speed. Now they need to take the next layer of that offense, I should say, and take the next level to the next step.
And take the next lay too. Take the next lay.
I was going to say
don't
layer, but then
decline that.
Take the next layer.
Take the next layer. I know what you're
layer.
Saying.
Next layer of the offense, not next lay of the offense.
Sports is a constant game of adjustments, and now it's their time to make that adjustment, and they're going to have an answer to it. Week 13, Cowboys at the Saints. This is one that we talked about a little bit yesterday. With no Drew Brees and not knowing what the Cowboys' defense looks like, this could be a real competitive game. I'm guessing the dome will be blaring.
Yeah, I mean, anytime Sean Payton's had to play without Drew Brees, he still had success with Taysom Hill and with Teddy Bridgewater. So I'm assuming whichever one of these quarterbacks wins the job that they're going to be able to win games. It may not look as pretty and may not be as prolific as it looks when Drew Brees, the Hall of Fame Drew Brees, is in there at the helm. But I think they'll be able to figure out a way to win games. Remember, the defense is still one of the better top 10 defenses in the NFL. So they're not a lopsided formula to win. They have balance with the Saints.
They have balance. I don't know if they're a 9-win team, a 10-win team, an 11-win team. You're right. He's done a really good job with Taysom Hill and Bridgewater, but it hasn't been for the whole year.
No.
But also, he hasn't had the whole offseason to really think and to know that he's going to have a different
also
offense.
True.
So he obviously would have like not trick plays, but packages set up.
He'll definitely, for both.
For both them. And yeah. I expect that again this year. Week 14, Bills at the Buccaneers. Bills are a team. Are you as high on the Bills as some people are? I mean, is this a 12-13 win team?
Yeah.
And is this the AFC East front runner?
Yeah. I mean,
because they are for me.
Yeah, no, they're unbelievable. Josh Allen and his progression has been extraordinary. I don't think anybody saw it coming.
I was off on that.
I think everybody was off on Josh Allen. Yeah, he had the raw materials, but we had never seen a guy who had been that inaccurate, all right, against subpar competition in college,
yep,
go to be drafted that high in the NFL, and then all of a sudden become a more accurate quarterback at the next level within a couple of years. That's exactly what they've been able to do with him. And they saw him at the Senior Bowl, and they said they could help him make that transition. So he's been great. They're the class of the AFC East, no question. They'll be in the AFC championship hunt.
Yeah, no, I think they will. There's some good matchups as we go through here. Week 16, Jaguars at the Jets. Week 17, Browns at the Steelers. But nothing that overly stands out. I would say week 17, Dolphins at the Titans. And you can tell as we're going through this, you can tell which teams that we are really curious about and maybe have high hopes for. I like how the Dolphins are building that. It just gets back to Tua, and do they put him in a better spot to succeed this year?
Yeah, they got him a weapon.
And is he better?
Yeah, they got him Jalen Waddle, so they got him some more toys to play with. Last year, they did not put him in a very advantageous position, right? They throw him out there. Anytime he would struggle with situational football, whether it be the two-minute drill or in the red zone or, you know, managing the clock, they would take him out of the game. They'd put in Ryan Fitzpatrick. So instead of being able to learn from his mistakes, they would indict him essentially for making those mistakes, which are just growing pains for a young quarterback. They won't have that luxury this year. They'll have to allow him to learn as he goes and learn through those mistakes. So I think he's got the talent, but I wonder if they have the patience to be able to stick with him, because they didn't have patience last year at all. He doesn't know how to handle a two-minute drill? Get him out of there. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to take that loss with your franchise quarterback, so he'll learn now, in a two-minute drill, I need to, if we don't get that first down, or that guy doesn't catch it, or we don't get to get the yardage we want, I need to call a timeout, or we need to do this. He needs to understand that, and I think those are lessons a young quarterback just has to learn.
You know, that's one thing, I'm glad you brought that up, because when I saw this game, I was hoping we'd get into this a little bit. You know, I think we forget Do you remember what the narrative was after Peyton Manning's rookie year?
Oh, he was overrated.
Bust.
It was a bust, yeah.
Wrong pick.
Yep.
Bust.
Yeah, more interceptions than touchdowns.
You're screwed. Yes.
Yeah.
And there was a real worry. And the next year they win 10 games and they're in the playoffs. Or 10-plus.
Yeah.
And they're in the playoffs and it's like, okay, this guy's going to be okay. I'm not saying Tua's going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, but what I'm saying is don't take just last year and completely sell on him.
Exactly. And don't just take that 1 year and completely buy it like Justin Herbert.
Fair point.
Right? Because it could just be an outlier. You know, you can start quickly and then something can throw it off the rails or drive it off the rails, whether it be an injury or whether it be the system you're in or whether it be, you know, you just getting in your own head, which happened with Carson. What happened to Carson Wentz?
Yep.
What happened? Does anybody know exactly what happened? Was it the injuries?
I think we overrated him early, and now we're probably selling a little too much.
Exactly. So we just don't. I'm with you. Just don't overreact. It's as they always say about the film, right? It's never as good as you think. It's never as bad as you think either.
Yeah.
With Tua, it was probably not as bad as coach thought it was at the time. And
he's got a hard ass coach too.
He does. This is true.
Flores is. Where does he come from?
Yeah, that Belichick regime. You're right. Doesn't help the situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's the receiver that he was upset with?
Oh, was it Kenny Stills?
Kenny Stills, yes.
Yeah. Because he was basically joining the protest during the national anthem. And they basically had some passive aggressive relationship because he thought it was kind of a distraction for the team.
It was weird. Hey, I know something that's not an outlier, and that is Vaqueros, man. You may
not an outlier.
You go there once and you love it. You can go there 10 times. You're going to love it.
Yeah, I love Vaqueros. You guys know that. I'm always talking about how great the experience is, and it'll be great for you too. As a matter of fact, probably around 6:15, I'll be making my usual Tex-Mex Friday order, getting my Tex-Mex fix on a Friday with Vaqueros. And you should do the same thing too, but like me, I always get the same thing. The Hall of Fame fajitas, which I love. I always get that frozen margarita to go, which I suggest you do the same thing. And now that is law in Texas. That's a beautiful thing. And I love the chips and queso and the shrimp rochette, the bacon-wrapped shrimp. Are amazing too. They have so many great features at Vaqueros. Go check out their revamped menu at VaquerosCafe.com. They also have a new playscape near the back patio. So they encourage you to bring the kiddos out so you can have the entire family out there and enjoy the best Tex-Mex experience in Central Texas. If you want takeout, give them a call at 512-382-7899. To place your takeout order, or you can just dine in if you prefer. It's a beautiful afternoon, so they got lots of room on the back patio. And you can also enjoy the great customer service at Vaqueros as well. That's Vaqueros, the best Tex-Mex in the ATX.
I'm taking some time off next week. So when I get back, Rod, you know what's going to be officially done?
Ooh, what's that?
The Texas baseball regular season.
Oh,
and we're
going to
be getting
right.
ready for regional play. We already talked about the host sites. We'll remind you about that, give away some tickets. And I'm going to tell you exactly what Texas needs to do to make sure they finish this thing off. There's actually some work ahead of them, some things they can work on to make sure they are as good as possible heading into regionals.
I like that 5-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one-and-done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One-and-done time. As I mentioned, taking a little vacation. We're starting to get all of our vacations set up. Obviously, it's not going to happen this fall. We are excited about Texas football. But, Rod, you're taking some vacation here soon, aren't you?
Not anytime soon.
Getting all that set up.
Yeah, I'll take some, but
you got the wedding too.
That's probably be a vacation time for me. I haven't taken a vacation.
It better be a vacation
since we started the show.
No, you've been fantastic.
So that will probably be the only time I take some vacation.
BK's got a religious holiday every other week, so we can't really get on him for that.
Definitely taking the most vacation time of all of us.
I know, but a lot of it is like, hey, it's because I believe, and it's like, okay, well,
I'm not hating. I'm just saying,
we're not hating at
all. If you're tracking it. There's no doubt he has taken the most vacation time out of all of us.
So
God bless him.
God bless him, exactly. And it's one of the beauties of this show. We got three people, and so we feel a little bit more comfortable with that. But I will definitely be watching Texas, West Virginia. Don't forget, you got Texas and Rice next Tuesday. You guys have four or three very short shows, too. Because you got Tuesday.
Nice.
And then Texas, West Virginia is going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They moved that up a little bit.
I like
and
that.
That's going to be it for Texas. Look, they've got four games left. And, God, man, they've been really impressive this year. They've been better than I thought they were going to be. You remember whenever everything came down with the NCAA, Rod, we were at Onion Creek doing the show.
Yep.
And I told you, I said, Rod, this could be one of the deepest college baseball seasons we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be guys back, especially when you're dealing with 11.7 scholarships. They're going to be guys back that traditionally wouldn't come back.
Right.
I don't think Austin Todd, Zach Zubia, DJ Petrinsky, those guys, I doubt they come back. And also on the flip side of that, you probably don't get Tanner Witt because it was only a 5-round major league draft.
That's right.
So they couldn't gamble as much with maybe going to get that guy because they're going to have 45 other selections to help fill out their minor league system. And I think a lot of that played true, that it has been a good college baseball year. And Texas has been very good. And like I said, even a little bit better than I thought. Their power speed has been fantastic. And what's the one word that I've used all year long with this team?
Resilient.
Resilient. They're resilient within a game. They're resilient within a series, a week, whatever you're looking for. Just a resilient team. And a lot of that goes back to the point of how veteran they are. This is an older team, and they feel like it. When they've had a two-game losing streak, they snap out of it. When someone gets two runs, not every time, but it feels like a majority of the time, they're coming back with two of their own right away.
Yeah, finding different ways to win. And when they do, you know, face some adversity, as you talked about, they usually bounce back pretty well. Whether it be during the actual game or the next game, you'll see them bounce back. So that's what you like about this team, because they're about to see plenty of adversity. That's what it's all about when you get to the playoffs and you get to the postseason of any kind.
Yeah. So I think this team is set up well. Some of the things I have talked about, maybe some things that I know that David Pierce is thinking about and things that you hope don't rear their head again in these four games as you get ready for regional play. Because once you get out there, man, you kind of are who you are. And for the most part, obviously, they're 50 games in. They're going to be who they are at this point. They got to get the base running cleaned up, and they've got to, when they're asked to bunt, bunt. One thing I really like about David Pierce that he's done is he has not been predictable, I don't think, in terms of offensively what they're going to do. Eric Kennedy would be the most predictable guy bunting because he's been struggling at the plate. But you'll see a lot of hit and run. You'll see straight steal. And that's how this team is really going to hurt people. I mean, if you look at what they, what they've done on the base paths, they're 64 of 82. I mean, they run, and they've got some guys that can really do damage. Doug Hodo, obviously. Eric Kennedy, when he gets on. Mike Antico. Trey Faltini, who's starting to come around a little bit. So use that speed on the base pass, but you got to get your bunts down. And with that speed, you got to be smart. I like their aggressive base running, but sometimes, and some of this has been on Pierce, who's not been a great third base coach, is you just got to make the wise decision. You can't be too aggressive and run yourself out of innings.
What happened in that that TCU? Was it game two against TCU where we saw
that was
some
Cam Field
base running errors? Was that more players, you know, bad decisions, or do you put that more on coaching, or just one of those outliers where they just weren't clicking? They just didn't have the chemistry that day.
Good question. Put especially the Cam Fields, when you've got a ball hit right back to the mound, you got to make sure that clears. Like you can't be thrown out at home there.
Yep.
And Cam has that in his game. Cam has swag, and he's just got a lot of confidence, and he goes for it. He's aggressive. I love that.
I do too.
If you're going to lean either
way,
gonna
do it,
lean that way, but be smart aggressive.
My coach always said, I would always side with a player who's aggressive. If you're going to mess up, as Coach Bull Reese would say, if you're going to F up full speed, son.
You used to say that to
you.
I love
just go,
that.
Go all the way. Don't be stuck in purgatory and like you don't know what you're going to do, and then you're not helping, not hurting. Just go.
Well, like most things in life, don't be timid.
Just go.
If you're going to fail, make sure you're actually going and really giving it a shot.
Yeah, exactly.
The pitching's been great. Their ERA is 2.92. Really, really like the timing of Pete Hansen coming in and being that now Sunday starter. And I think that could change a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Pierce wants to keep them on that same rotation. So you're going to see Ty Madden on Thursday. You're going to see, most likely, you're going to see Tristan Stevens on Friday. And then that final game on Saturday is going to be Pete Hansen. And Rod, this just works out really well. We've talked about the three guys coming out of the pen that have been fantastic for them: Aaron Nixon, Tanner Witt, and then also Cole Quintanilla. But They're also in a spot maybe this weekend as I talk about things they can clean up or things the last time you have to study before the final exam. let's find out if there's any other arms there. Lucas Gordon and Drew Shiflett did not look good the last time they were out, and that would have been against TCU on Sunday. But I think Lucas Gordon can give them a lefty out of the pen, specifically to get left-handers out. Shiflett is a sinker-slider guy, really dropping down. I think he's someone who can come in and get some right-handers out. Is there anyone else outside of that? And maybe if they get into a blowout-type situation in these four games, that's when all of a sudden you see Austin Wallace or Justin Eckert or guys like that, just to see if they can come in and see where they're at right now.
Yeah. No, I like the way Cole Quintanilla came in and pitched. Thought he did well, but I'm with you. There was some concern about Shiflett a little bit. And Tanner Witt looked strong, too.
Man.
Thought he really did prove himself. He talked about battling adversity. Came in some really tough circumstances and battled through it. So he's starting to see a lot of his grit as a pitcher come out too in these recent weeks.
You really are. And think about how bright the future is for Texas baseball. You got Aaron Nixon and Tanner Witt, who are true freshmen. Lucas Gordon, also a true freshman. But those guys, man, they haven't acted like freshmen. I mean, Nixon has really gotten his stuff together. He pounds the zone. He's a fastball slider guy. And Tanner Witt is special, the way he carries himself. Nixon, too. I mean, he carries himself really well. But you wouldn't think that they're freshmen. I think they go with Cole Quintanilla. Their bullpen looks good. You're just looking to add a couple pieces there. The lineup is as deep and even outside of starters as I can remember for a long time. You got Murphy Staley and Dylan Campbell and guys like that are pretty good players to be able to come off the bench. I really like this team. They just got to clean up a couple things. They got four games left. If they go 2-2, I think they're top eight. They could go 1-3, and they're still probably top eight. Rice is not your older brother's Rice team. Let's say your dad's Rice team, but Rice stunk then.
I remember when
they're not the Rice when we were in college.
I was going to say, I remember Rice being a powerhouse. Has it been that long since? Are they having an outlier? Or this thing is something that's gone on for a while.
It's gone on for a while. Okay. Wayne Graham was the guy who played here at Texas and built that program, and then he started to fade a little bit. That program started to fade a little bit, and now anytime you know the way that is, you replace a legend.
Yep.
I mean, Rice baseball was Wayne Graham. The only time they've been good. So all of a sudden he's gone. It's still got a great reputation, and I think that they can be a power, but they have not been the last couple of years. They've had their issues.
Yeah. No, I remember those days, too. And you talk about it because you just had a really good one and done about this. Maybe it was last week about Texas, the state of baseball in the state of Texas.
TCU and Tech.
The changing, and the changing of the guard and all that kind of stuff. Rice, at one point, I remember, was considered one of them big dogs.
They were.
Big dog in the state, yeah.
I mean, Rice was for a long time, not a long time, but a 10-year span, maybe 15-year span, was the second best program in the state, and right there with Texas. I mean, those were the two programs. A&M obviously is always going to have some talent, but then TCU around 2014 jumped in, and Texas Tech jumped in a little bit after that with Tim Tadlock. So when I come back, regular season's going to be done. We're going to know exactly where Texas is playing in the regional. We do know, almost know, that Texas will at least be hosting a regional. The final 16 predetermined sites are going to be revealed. That's at 7:30 Sunday, May 30th. And then the bracket and pairings for the whole bracket for the whole tournament are going to be Monday, May 31st on ESPN2. I'm excited about this, man. When Texas has a good team, there's something about this time of the year. And as you pointed out earlier, I think with COVID and everything, people are even more excited to get out to the ballpark. Mm-hmm. Just get out and do anything.
It's going to be packed, man. Well, I guess I can't say packed. It'll be as packed as it can be once the regional starts, because Longhorn fans are really excited. They're excited about this baseball team, and they're excited about getting out.
You put those two things together.
Exactly.
There's going to be a lot of people.
There's going to be a lot of people.
Certainly having fun.
Are you getting out there?
Occupy left field. For the regional?
Yeah.
For the regional, I'm going to get out there. Obviously, I won't.
You hadn't gone out to a lot of games this year.
No, I've only been out to one. And so I need to get out there. Need to go see all the people.
I might try to go to a couple. Who knows?
Yeah. But you're all good now. You're maskless. You're just...
Hey, I'm just getting out there.
You're living the life,
I'm listening
man.
To the CDC.
That's I know all. You are.
Just listening
I know
to
you
the
are.
CDC.
All right, so if you're listening to us, when we get back, we're giving away New York Yankees, Texas Rangers tickets for Tuesday, May 18th.
Ooh.
So this coming Tuesday... Make sure you can go, obviously, but I'm guessing we're going to have a lot of Yankees fans and Rangers fans that want to do that, and that has not been a problem. Rangers are leading Major League Baseball in attendance. We'll give away those tickets when we get back. This is The Horn.
D.D. Mega Doodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain bag comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Off the record time, before we get to that, because it is kind of a cheesy story. Call, if you'd like right now, the Carol's Cafe and Cantina Hotline. All you got to do is give them a buzz. 512-447-3776. 512-447-3776. Caller number six will get Yankees-Rangers tickets this Tuesday. And we're going to be giving away another pair later on in the show. You can also check us out on Twitter. Check out the Horn's Twitter page, and there's a contest to be able to get them there. But Yankees, Rangers, we got tons of Yankees fans. We got a lot of Rangers fans. I'm guessing that is going to be a very easy one to give away. 512-447-3776. Anywhere the Yankees go, Rod, they're Yankees fans.
Oh, yeah.
They're like the Cowboys that way.
They are like the Cowboys that way. I was actually listening to Ed Too Tall Jones on B&E this morning.
Yeah.
I'd recommend anybody.
Some good interviews by GuitarHornFM.com. Johnson was great.
Yeah, Derek Johnson was good. They did something with the NFL alumni. I apologize. I can't remember exactly what it was. But they had a lot of great interviews. NFL alumni, shout out. They're great. Love El Presidente. Mm-hmm. My man Raul Alegre, always doing great work. Charitable work. They are the, I should give them props for this because it happens year in and year out. They're really proud of it. They raise more money for charity than any other NFL alumni branch in the country.
Texas?
They don't even have a team.
Wow.
Like I'm just saying, here in the NFL
alumni. The Austin chapter, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
They are just fantastic. The last like 5 or 6 years has just been unbelievable. But they had Ed Too Tall Jones on there. All the stories Ed Too Tall Jones told. He didn't play football in high school.
Isn't that crazy?
He didn't play football in high school.
I knew that, but to hear him talk about it, it's what? Like, what?
He's like, yeah, I didn't play football in high school. Then he went to college and he played there. And he was just telling just these crazy stories about how he got in fights for the first 8 practices because the coaches told the other players to pick on him because they wanted to see if he was tough because he was just big. And they found out, like, no.
He's
tough as hell.
He's a real deal.
He likes to fight, actually. They found out he was a likes-to-fight guy at 6'8", or whatever the hell he was.
I wouldn't have liked that assignment.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, really? Coach told me to go.
Go pick on him. What? Screw you.
Go get in a fight with Ed Too Tall Jones.
You go pick on
him. He wasn't too tall then, but still.
Yeah.
He was. He's always been too tall. But he talks about how he played in the outfield at like 6'6".
Yeah. I know. I was hearing that. I was trying to think of some guys like that. But he's just a crazy, crazy athlete.
Yeah.
And no, that was really good stuff. Get to HornFM.com to check out any of the week shows and get the Horn app. I know lots of people are listening right now on the Horn app. We're giving away those tickets. We'll give away more Rangers Yankees tickets and get to Horn. Get to HornFM.com, but also get to the Horn Twitter page, and you can maybe win some more. All right, off the record here. You know I'm a food nerd, right? And
I love
this chef. Stephanie Izard is a superstar. She's fantastic. She's got Girl on the Goat in Chicago. I think almost all of her restaurants are in Chicago, but she has really built up just an awesome reputation. She was one of the top chef winners. One of those reality shows. I think I almost said you're a woman. I'm falling into your trap.
Yeah, see?
I think you're a fiance.
She's a woman. Why can't when a
she is a woman,
when
but
a
I'm
woman
not going to call her
when
woman.
When a woman says my man, everybody thinks that's cool.
Now,
we live
my
in man.
A feminized society, so it's
when
not going to
turn my man,
around.
Oh, my man did this. Oh, that's my man.
Yeah.
It's all good. When I say my woman, it's like, oh.
That's a fair point.
You're insulting. I'm like, she's a woman.
I know.
She's my woman.
God, you sound like me there.
It's crazy.
I'm like talking myself off the ledge.
Just say it.
So Stephanie Izard was helping out with this. Cheez-Its. You like Cheez-Its? The snack?
Neither fair nor foul. I don't
really
care. Either way.
Are you a Goldfish fan?
I think I prefer goldfish over Cheez-Its, actually. Aren't they the same thing?
No, they're not.
No, I like goldfish. I'm glad more I got into on this conversation.
Yeah, I like goldfish more than Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its usually have the salt on them, a little saltier.
Just a little bit, yeah. They definitely are saltier, yeah. But either way, they get those. Both those snacks get stuck in my teeth, something fierce, and I hate it.
Oh, see,
I like Cheez-Its with Cherry Coke.
Cheez-Its with Cherry Coke.
Yeah, there's
that's
something
a thing. Have you been a pregnant woman before? Like,
I was 9 years old. That's when that's when that came about.
Wow.
So I didn't realize Cheez-Its have been around for 100 years.
I believe that. Yeah.
Really, Cheez-Its?
Hold up. So
were they always called Cheez-Its though? I'm wondering if that was like a name change.
That's true.
I'm guessing there was like Uncle Jerry's digestive biscuit back in like 1920s, something like that.
He's totally right. Digestive biscuit.
Yeah, they were created 100 years ago in Dayton, Ohio in the spring of 1921. I would have guessed like the 60s or 70s, but...
Sure. With a name like Cheez-It, yeah. But did they have a name change somewhere? Rebranding?
No.
It doesn't say that,
Dead on. I don't even have to look it up, John. I'm telling you around the money because it's all about marketing. And some guy probably came up with this, and that dude was bought out by some really smart marketing mind. He was like, dude, we're not going to call this the digestive biscuits or whatever it is. We'll call it Cheez-It. Because it tastes like Cheez-It. And that's when people started buying it, dude. It's the same thing that happens all the time in sales and marketing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's all about what you call it, how you market, rather than how good the product is. Unfortunately,
and Cheez-It is spelled with a Z, right?
It is. Yeah.
No one in the 1920s would ever do
with
that.
The hyphen.
They would
lock them
up and throw away the key for doing that type of thing in the 1920s. That's too radical for them.
That actually feels like something that would have been created even in the last 5-10 years.
Right. But that's very 90s.
It's been around for 100 years and. So Stephanie was tasked with, she said she's a big Cheez-It fan, with creating a Cheez-It cake, guys.
It's disgusting.
A cake made of Cheez-Its.
So it's made of, it's not just flavored, it's made with them?
It's flavored with it and made with it.
Why would you do
that? What's the rundown like?
So it's not only in the flavor, but also gives the look of the box. So it actually, it's going to have the Cheez-It flavor, which I like, but then also it's going to look like the box on the outside. This is just, there's no reason to create this.
Savory cake is something that just shouldn't be a thing in general, you know. I'm not vibing with that at all, no.
I'm not either. Rod, you said you're not even a Cheez-It fan, but I saw.
This is disgusting.
I saw your face, and.
I cannot believe this is even a thing.
I wonder how much she's getting paid for this, because she's a really good chef, and she says that she really likes Cheez-Its, but Rod, this is something that is probably just going a little bit too far. They added cheddar caramel, too.
In 1921, Cheez-It was marketed as, quote, a baked rare bit.
You were close, John.
They all sound the same.
A baked rare bit. Yeah, so then later on, somebody was like, nah, we're going to call it Cheez-It.
So it's not all going to be Cheez-It. They got cheddar caramel, and they've got the red icing to make it look like the box, which is made with Nesquik.
The physical cake itself, the frosting or the filling, has Cheez-It in it.
Yeah, there's going to be ground up Cheez-Its, and then there's also like just real Cheez-Its
like
that are kind of like
and
yeah
on the top.
On top as decoration and everything.
Tummy ache waiting to happen. If I were ever to get a hangover from a cake, it's that thing.
Yeah, and it's just got to be way too salty.
That is just, I just don't understand why anybody would even experiment with a Cheez-It cake.
Right.
What made them want to do this?
Hey, there's going to be a limit, because they're trying, as they said, with the Cheez-Ennials, as they're calling them.
No.
It's the Cheez-Ennial, because it's 100 years.
Ugh.
They're just trying to create a buzz. So there's going to be a limited supply. I'm not sure that's going to be a problem. Limited supply of $49 cakes. $49 for this. Get the hell out of here. They're going to be released until May 20th.
Ugh.
This is disgusting.
No, it is. Are you looking at it?
I'm just grossed out by even the thought of it.
There it is, Rod. You see it?
No, I don't. Is that actual buttercream frosting on it, too?
Yeah.
They're trying to get the sweet and the tang, the sweet and the savory together.
It's
going to
be too sweet, too salty, and I love both those things.
You're the food porn guy.
It's not going to work.
You would know.
Although, you know what? I'd like to taste it. If we could get one of these here, Jason Desori, you were listening earlier.
You'll taste anything.
If you want to order it, I'll do it FaceTime. I'll get in on it.
I won't. And that would make me nauseous.
Just BK and I have tasted stuff here, and you won't even taste it. You go, I'm not doing it.
It'll make me nauseous. Some stuff will just make me nauseous.
All right.
Well, and that will.
I don't want that.
On a John Friday, then I'll definitely have a taste of it.
If John's here, he definitely will. We know.
Free lunch? You kidding me? I'll do it.
We know BK will.
I'm picky about desserts, though, man. Like, I don't like cobblers or pies.
You're not a cobbler pie guy.
I'm anti-cobbler, anti-pie.
I'm not a cobbler guy.
I'm a cake guy. Cake and cupcakes, not those cakes.
There are some pies that are great. Chocolate silk pie may be my favorite dessert when it's really well done. Mm. But I'm not a cobbler guy at all.
I don't know, man. I got to bring in my mom's homemade raspberry cobbler, raspberry pie. Come on. Homemade raspberries fresh
in my
yard.
I'm sure it's great. I bet it's good, but I just can't eat cobblers and pies. I've learned that in my 40 years. I don't like pies and cobblers. I like the change
of texture in my dessert. I can't have it all just be one homogenous sponge that I'm like eating through. That's how I see cakes.
Cakes have layers.
Yeah.
Tiers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The first layer is cake, and then the second layer is cake. And, oh, whoa, what's that third layer? Oh, it's more cake. Oh, great. It's
separated by icing.
Oh, good.
Come on.
So
yeah, it's good when I have no teeth when I'm older, but when I still have teeth and can eat into something, give me a pie or cobbler.
I love it.
I love the idea. I don't think I'd like the actual product. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I know I would.
But I'm willing to try it. So if any one of our listeners, if anyone wants to go ahead and buy it, I will try it for sure. But I'm sure there's some people that just love Cheez-Its that are fired up about this.
I don't know anybody who loves Cheez-Its that much. Do you have Cheez-Its in your house right now?
No.
What about you, Jen? See, none of you guys thought you love Cheez-Its.
I don't have a lot of snacks like that. I mean, I would have in college, but I was more of a Goldfish guy.
It's true.
And if you're going to go, just get some Cheetos.
Yeah, if you're going to go.
If you're going to go, go.
Go. Isn't this healthier, though, than Cheetos?
I don't know. Okay. You just cued a Trey Ellen call right there.
All right, my bad.
On that note, we're getting out of here. We're 2 hours in. We got 2 hours to go. Coming up next, we are talking Texas football. We got someone who is all about Hudson Card. He thinks he should be the starting quarterback, and he knows his stuff. We're talking ball with Ian Boyd up next.